I'm going to head turn back.
Okay. Today's daf is Kuf Zayin. We're going to start at the top of Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph, the second line, Itmar. Okay, just to go back, yesterday we started with the case of the Simanavu Meitzarav, and we have Pachot Mishtut Higi'o, Ad Shtut Yinakeh, right? The whole thing was about this 1/6 value that once you say, I'm giving you this specific area of land, and then you said, according to these boundaries as you see them, right? And according to the markers and the boundaries. So then we're going to jump from the 1/24th ratio of margin of error to 1/6. And then we discussed that for a while. Then the Gemara went off on a tangent, really a tangent, and we started with this Rabbi Yossi who talked about Ha'achim Shechalku, Kevan Shala Goral Achamehem Kanu Kulam. Right? We started to talk about the Goral and how the Goral affects a kinyan for brothers that are dividing, or children that are dividing portions of their parents. And which really seemed totally disconnected and really is disconnected. Then it led us to a case which is still kind of disconnected, but the Rashbam claims that it's because of this case that brought the connected them, which is this machloket Rav and Shmuel about batala machloket or mikamtsin. So we saw a case of two brothers who divided a property. So I didn't say this well enough yesterday, but it was, according to the Mefarshim, it's a case where there's a third brother, but they don't even know of his existence. So when they divided the property, they didn't know he existed. They divide the property into two, and then the brother shows up, and then they have to figure out what do they do. Either Rav says they cancel the whole thing, and this is, again, it's a very weak connection. One thing I could suggest is that maybe the Gemara wanted to get us into the area of Yerusha and get us ready because it's coming up in the next parak. That's Yesh Nochlin, all about Nachala and Yerusha. So maybe that's why this is coming. And it's marginally connected. Again, the Mefarshim have difficulty trying to make the connection. But Rav says, Betala Machloket. In other words, we forget the whole division and we start from scratch. And Shmuel says, no, we take what he already has and then we kind of, you know, we take from the two brothers a certain amount to give to the third brother. And that maybe that's a little similar to this case of where things weren't done exactly properly. Again, it's not the strongest connection. Okay, continuing in this vein, we're going to have another case today, and another machloka Rav and Shmuel, with actually a third opinion of Rav Asi, about brothers who divide property. Itmar, achim shechalku, uba bal chov, v'natal chelko shel echad mehem. So the father owed money. The Baal Chov comes along. Remember, the Baal Chov can take it from land. We're not talking about Yitomim here. We're talking about older people. And the Baal Chov comes, and he goes to take his land. What does he do? Instead of taking a third from one brother, a third, let's say, or let's just assume it's two brothers. There's a machloka. What the case is it two? Is it three? We'll go with the option that it's two. Instead of taking from both of them a small amount, he takes all of it from one brother. And that brother loses his entire, in other words, that was his whole Yerusha. So now, I mean, it doesn't really matter whether it was a whole Yerusha or not, but we'll see the when they start talking, it's clear that they're talking about a case where he took everything. So what happens now? Rav Amar Betala Machloket. So Rav says, we go back to the drawing board. We have to re-divide the property because one brother ended up with nothing, and one brother, right? And it wasn't his fault. It was the father's debt that caused him to lose his property. Okay, Shmuel Amar Viter. Shmuel says, tough luck. He lost out. He gets nothing. The guy took from his property. Emalasa. V'Rav Asi Amar Notel Revia Bekarka uRevia Bemaut. Okay, there's going to be a few different interpretations about what he means here. Okay, it sounds like you could read it like this: either he gets his half back, a quarter in land and a quarter in money. Okay, so the brother pays him a quarter in land, a quarter in money. I'll explain soon why, because soon the Gemara is going to get into what their logic is. And another way of reading it is he only gets a quarter either of the land of the other brother or of the... And that's in theory, what should he get? Right? Let's just draw it out, okay? This is one brother's land. This is two, you know, brother number two. Brother number two gets his land taken away. So he wants to go to brother number one and take half his land, right? So according to this, he only gets a quarter. Okay, he gets a quarter of the land, he doesn't get a half. And the other brother's left with three quarters, and he can either get it in land or he can get it in money. In other words, the brother can compensate him financially. Okay, we're going to talk about soon why this is. I want to get back, before we actually go on and understand the logic behind these three answers, I want to explain a little bit about how the case could have actually happened. The Mefarshim all ask, how can a Baal Chov come and take from only one brother? The first you grapple with it. So some of them say, no, he can. You know, if he wants land, he can go take land, right? It's his choice. If there was land that was lien to the loan, So if he wants to go, he can choose whatever land. It's not his issue to deal with the fact that he's taking it from one brother and not the other. So some think it's totally fine, he can do that. Some say, no, he has really no rights to collect from whichever one he wants. In theory, you should take from all of them. But this was a case, if you remember the term apotiki, where you made the land an apotiki, meaning when the father took the loan out, he said, you can take from this particular plot. So he specifically designated the second brother's plot. And it could be the brother didn't know this when they were splitting up the Yerusha, right? Because otherwise maybe he should have been smart and maybe split that 50-50 between him and the other brother. That's Tosfot's opinion. Tosfot Yeshanim says that he really should have taken from both brothers. But for whatever reason, he didn't. And once he took it already, then it's his. Okay? So in other words, this isn't ideal. Not supposed to do that. But once you do it, it's done. So that's the third option. And the fourth is a good option, which is that, if you remember, the Baal Chov collects from Benoni land, the average land. So it could be that one brother had Idit land, better land, and the other brother had Benoni land, and when the Baal Chov comes to collect, he's not allowed to collect from the best land. He can only collect from the Benoni. So because of that, he took from the brother who had the Benoni land and not the Idit. So maybe, in theory, he's not allowed to take just from one brother, but in the case where one brother has the Benoni land and the other brother has the Idit land, that might explain it.
That would suggest that the split might not have been even. Maybe he has more.
So I knew you were going to say, okay. But that's not true, because generally, if they split it, Idit and Benoni, so probably the first brother had a smaller plot of land and the other brother had a bigger plot of land.
Which could lead into the explanation that we don't know yet about why he only gets a quarter of it instead of a half.
No, because no matter what, it's still valued at the same value, so it should still mean he should get a quarter of this land, because in the end, right, if this was valued, let's say, at 100, and that's valued at 100, so it doesn't matter the size. It's the matter of it's the issue of the value. Okay? What did you want to suggest?
That whatever the father or and the loan person would have stipulated, would that affect in the end what rights the second brother would have to get compensation from his first brother? Like in a case where...
Let's say it was a potiki.
Or if the father designated particularly that side of the field that should go, he said, bad luck, that was your problem, you didn't know what our father had done.
Right. So the truth is their opinions don't really go in that direction. They each have a different theory as to what, and it's not necessarily affected by any deal, how you would have understood this, I don't think. Okay, so now let's see the opinions. Rav Amar B'Tala Machloket, the split that they did originally is canceled, and we redo everything, and, they each get half of what's left. Why? Kasavar Ha'achim Shachalku Yorshim Heim. Because he views, this is basic Machloket, we've seen this before, that when brothers split a property, they're considered Yorshim. Okay, well, obviously they're Yorshim. What does this mean? Really, you have to understand the second opinion to understand what this means. The other opinion says they're like lekuchim. They're like buyers. In other words, the relationship between them is as if one bought the property from the other. Which means what? Once you buy the property, you can't renege and say, oh, let's just redo it. But if you say that they got it as Yorshim, and then connected with their Yerusha, meaning the father's chov, this land was taken away. So since you got the land as Yorshim, therefore, we always view this as Yerusha land, and if your land got taken away because of the father's debt, then we split whatever's left. That's how he views it. Ushmuel amar viter, why? Kasavar ha'achim shachaku likuchotein. They are purchasers. Ukilokeach, now what's the issue here? If you buy land and the land was leaned, right, to some loan, so what's the story? Generally, we say you buy ba'achrayut, right? So you purchase the land and then the seller is telling you, well, in the event that this gets taken away based on the loan that I had, so I will replace the land or I will give you the value of the land. So what does he say? But it's like when the achim chalku their likuchot ukilokech shalom ba'achrayut ami. But they're as if they're a buyer without achrayut. Okay, which means that in this case, now again, it's not that the property was leaned to a loan the other brother had, but still it was leaned to a loan that both of them had on their heads, really, from the father. And because of that, he says, it doesn't make a difference, because this is like a lokeach shelo ba'achrayut. Okay? That doesn't assume any responsibility. That's when brothers split up properly, they know, you're going to get this one, I'm going to get this one, and whatever happens, happens. What do you want to
say? It seems like the time period should be relevant, because if they divide it up and this happens immediately, it's one thing. What happens if it happens 5 years later, mm-hmm. and one has already developed the land? You know, it seems like when can this happen? There's no right. limit to it?
Yeah, so it does sound like there's really no limit, and that's the idea, that you always, according to Rabbi, maybe, and the truth is, Shmuel, who we actually Paskin like, we'll see in general. Here, in this particular case, we're going to see that it's a little trickier. We don't, or not everyone Paskin's like Shmuel exactly. But in the general principle of Achim Shechalku, we call them Lekuchot. And I think it's to avoid problems down the road. That if we don't treat brothers, you know, or inheritors as Lekuchot, then this can go on, right, years later, and then you get into exactly the problems that Cherry's saying, which is one might have developed his property better, one might have developed it worse, and then you end up with not such great property. You know, there's all sorts of issues that could come up, and as we all know, siblings don't always get along in these issues, and it could create complications, and I think that's why Shmuel says, they're Lekuchot, and you're done, right? And they're Lokach Loach Rayud, he says, right? He goes so far as to say, not just a Lokach, but they assume no responsibility, because otherwise, it's just going to create a lot of problems down the road. So it's really, Rav, who says they're Yorshim, is somewhat complicated. I mean, you could see why he would say it, because again, it's a little unfair to the brother whose land got taken away. On the other hand, you know, the alternative is also quite complicated. And Ravasi is going to be our, right, Maman Mutal B'Safek Cholkin, right, anything we're in doubt about, what is his issue? Misapkale, I Yorshim Havu, I Lekuchot Havu. He doesn't know what they are. Are they Lekuchot? Are they Yorshim? Hilkach notil Revia Bekarka, or Revia Bimaut. Okay, therefore, okay, so now there's going to be two ways of understanding this. One way is the simple way. Well, again, the simple way is a little against what the words say. So the Rashbam understands that it's not Revia Bekarka u Revia Bimaut, it's Revia Bekarka o Revia Bimaut. And he says, since he's Misupak, does he get half or does he get nothing? What do we say? A quarter. It's very simple, right? That's the 50-50. And then he could get it either in land or in Maut. But others explain that what it means is he's not sure if he's a Yoresh or he's a Lokach. And within the Lokach, he's not sure whether he bought it by Achrayut or not. And therefore, we say that he gets half of it in money and half of it in land. And that's because, because if even if he's a Lokach, he's still, and as they assume he gets it by Achrayut, but if he gets it by Achrayut, then one option is he's a Yoresh, in which case he gets half the land, okay? So half the land will go to him if he's a Yorish. If he's a Lokach, he'll get half the land, but in the value of money, right? Why will he get it in money? Because when you buy Shelo B'Achrayut, right, he returns, when you buy land, B'Achrayut, sorry, with the responsibility, and then the land gets taken away, so they compensate you financially. So therefore, we're not sure, does he get half of it, half the property of the brother in land, or does he get half in money? So therefore, they say he gets his half, but a quarter of it is in money, and a quarter of it is in land. Okay? And so he disagrees. It's not that he's misupak, we hold like Rav Shmuel. Because Shmuel holds, he's a lokach without achrayut. So now we see there's three possibilities, really. Is he a yoresh? Is he a lokach without achrayut, like Shmuel said? Or Rav Asi's misupak, is he a lokach with achrayut? So according to Rav Asi, it's either he's a Yoresh or he's a Lokach with Achrayut. Either which way he gets it, it's just a matter of does he get it in land or does he get it in money. So that's a different interpretation of this whole, of this opinion. Okay, so one opinion says, he just doesn't know, is it Rav Shmuel? And does he get nothing or does he get half and therefore he gets a quarter? And either he gets it in land or he gets it in money. Or is he a Lokach with Achrayut? In which case, and then we split it 50-50. You know, we do 50 in land, 50 in money, but in the end, he still gets everything he's deserving of, just a matter of does he get it in land or money. Amara Papa, Hilchita Bechol Hanishmatita Mikamtsin. Okay, what does Mikamtsin mean? You remember from the last case? So he now says the halacha in all these cases, which I assume he's going back to the earlier cases also that we saw, is, you know, so you pass it like Shmuel in the earlier case, because Shmuel said Mekamsin, right? If the third brother comes, then what do? Each brother gives part of his thing to the other. And in this case, Shmuel says Viter, so he doesn't hold like Shmuel in our case, right? So it seems like he holds like Rav, but a little bit differently. Because Rav says, you Batla Machloket, the whole thing is canceled. But it sounds like he paskins like Rav, that you have to give the brother his portion, but he doesn't think that you go back and redivide the whole thing. It's that, what's the nafka meaning here? It's that the brother who has the land still, not the one that was taken away, gets to decide which half of the land he gives to the brother. Okay, that's the mekamsim. He gets to decide which one he gives to the other brother, and that's the psak. Amemar amar b'tala machloket. He holds like Rav across the board. V'hilchata, you know, it's in the other case also. And he holds that we actually erase everything, right, and go back to the drawing board. And hilchata b'tala machloket. Okay, so that's the halacha. A question is raised, and I'll leave it as a question. If we paskin like Shmuel, that ha'achim shachaku l'kuchotein, then how can we paskin like Rav, that b'tala machloket? So it's a bit of a question that the Mefreshim grapple with, and they try to come up with answers, but I'll leave it here as a question. Tanu Rabbanan, and in general, by the way, we paskin like, there's a klal, okay, that we paskin like Shmuel b'dinei mamono. So it's strange here that we actually paskin like Rav. And all the more so, if we paskin like Shmuel, achim shachaku l'kuchotein, how is it that we paskin like Rav here? Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. Shlosha shiardu lashum. We now have three judges who go to assess. Now we go back to the Shuma Yatomim that we saw. When we assess the land of Yatomim in order to pay back, you know, let's say pay the Almana Mizonot. So, and we go and assess their land. What if two assessed it and said it was Mane, it was 100? One said it was 100. V'shnayim omrim b'matayim, and two people assess the land that it's worth 200. Okay, this is obviously a huge difference. I imagine they just mean any real difference, right? This is probably just a random case taken, even though it's quite unlikely that there would be such a difference in price evaluation. Or echad omer b'matayim, v'shnayim omrim b'mane. One says 200, and two say 100. Batel yachi b'miuto. Okay, clearly, if two dayanim say one thing and one dayan says the other, we go by the two. That's obvious. Okay, now we're going to get into another three-way machloket. A lot of three-way machlokot today, which are not as common. What if echad omer b'shloshim? Echad omer b'mane. Okay, one says 100. V'echad omer b'esrim. Okay, esrim is not. This is a very strange way of writing it. Esrim is 20 sla'im, which is 80 dinarim. Mane is 100 dinarim or zuzim. Remember, dinarim and zuzim are the same. Okay? And a sela is 4 dinarim or 4 sla'im. So that's where we had the 50 shekel, right, is the sla'im, which is 200 zuzim, right? There's that amount in the Torah that always comes up about the 50, which is really 200 zuzim. So here we have, one guy says 100, the other guy says 20, which is really 80, okay? Because it's 20 sla'im, which is 80 dinarim. And the third guy says, echad omer b'shloshim, which is 30 sla'im, which is 120. Okay, so we have three different assessments given by the judges. One says 80, one says 100, one says 120. Okay? Now, what do we do? So, three way machloket. Okay? The first opinion is we go with 100. Okay, now there's an obvious machloket here. Why do we go with 100? Right? It's the middle, right? But the question is the difference between the average and the median, right? So if you say it's the average, so then we'll always take the average of the three. Let's say, right, it didn't come out exactly perfect, but it was 80, 95, and 120, right? So if you say it's the average, okay, then you're going to say, which is I think the Rambam says it's the average, then you would say you go with 100. But the Rashbam says it's the median, so you would go with 95, right? It's unfortunate the Gemara picked a case that wasn't clear, right? In other words, it could go both directions. What it means, nidon b'meh, right? Is it because it's the average or is it because it's the median? Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Tzadok omer, nidon b'tishim. We go with 90. Okay, seems strange, right? Why 90? Okay, we're going to get to the explanations. It's funny. The structure here is the exact same structure as earlier, where first they gave the three opinions, and then they went into each one and explained what each one's opinion was. Okay, so now the third opinion is, Acherim amrim osim shuma b'nehem umishalshim. Okay, what does that mean, osim shuma b'nehem? You take the differential between the first and the last, which is, right, the highest and the lowest, which in this case is 40, and you split it into three. Okay, and that gives you 13 and a third. And then what do? You add 13 and a third to the 80, to the lowest, and you end up with 93 and a third. And that's your answer. Seems creative math. Okay, we'll see why they do this. Manda Amar, okay, this, by the way, remember that show, The Price is Right? So you'd have to guess what the price is. So definitely the model to me, it seems like if you think of that game, so there was a thing, everybody had to guess how much something was worth. And then if you went over, we talked about this before once, right? If you went over, you went bust. If you were too low, you didn't lose necessarily, right? But if you went too high, then you lost. So we'll talk about what the logic of this is. Okay, that's going to be part of the thinking here. Okay, manda amar nidom bimana milta mitziata. Okay, that's the obvious, right? It's the middle. So that's a very simple one, right? That's easy to explain. Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Tzadik, omer nidom b'tishim. Why tishim? Kasavar ha'ara tishim shaveh. He assumed that the value of it must be tishim. So now you have to explain what everybody's, why everybody assessed it at a different amount. V'hai deka'amar esrim, the one who said 20, which is really 80, dekatai asara la'achore, right? He was 10 under. V'hai deka'amar mane katai asara la'kame. And the one who thought it was 100 was 10 too much. There's an assumption here that, I always say this, by the way, that if there was one interpretation, if it was obvious what the answer was, then everybody would say it. So the fact that we have multiple explanations means that nobody was really right. You know, nobody knew 100% what the truth was. So that's what he's saying here. The fact that three people had a different assessment means that clearly nobody was right. Okay, now you could say the opposite, right? But that his theory is clearly nobody got it right, because if they had gotten it right, then maybe more than one person would have gotten it right if they knew exactly what it was. So obviously everybody's somewhat off. So if everybody's somewhat off, well, let's take, he's like the first opinion, let's take the middle. But not the middle of all three, the middle of the first two. Okay, so now the Gemara questions that and says, what do you mean? Adraba, hi arameh basar shavya. Maybe it's not the middle of the first two, but maybe it's the middle of the second two, right? Of the last two, of the 100 and the 120. Maybe it's really valued at, if you're assuming that two people were off by 10 and one person was just totally wrong, why are you assuming that the guy who was the highest was totally wrong? Maybe the guy who was the lowest was totally wrong. And really, it was me'av asara shavya. V'hai dekamar mana katai asara l'chore. V'hai dekamar shloshim katai asara l'kame. Right? And then again, you'd say, the one who said 100 was 10 under. And the one who said 120 was 10 too high. So why don't you just say that? So what's the answer? Nikot mia tre kame biadech demitora mana lo mafkele. Okay, take the first two, biyadcha, in other words, go by those, to mitora mana lo make, because neither of them went over 100. Now, what's the assumption? The assumption here, I was trying to think about why the price is right. You would, right, if you went over, you busted, right? So I was talking to Seth about last night. He said, isn't that just the rules of the game? Like, you know, it's just, that's the way they decided on the show it was going to be. But in a sense, I think what's going on here is that really, the value, number one and number two are both right, because the land is worth at least 80, right? And maybe it's even worth up to 100, right? It's somewhere in that range. They're both right, or at least, right? It's at least worth 80. So the number, right, the bottom guy is for sure correct. Maybe he's not correct in the sense that it might be worth more than that, but at least he's assessed the actual amount, right? He hasn't gone over. Once you go over, you're already in a range that who knows what that is, right? It's beyond. It could be very well beyond the range. So since the 80 and the 100 are still within 100, so there's an assumption that they're correct. It's not a foolproof, you know, proof, but that's the assumption, that at least they're within the range of what actually could be, because it's at least worth 80. And so they're not wrong. They might not have... You understand? They're not exactly wrong, because they've assessed its value. Now, yes, it might have more than that value, but they haven't gone into a range that's beyond. Obviously, if you say it's worth 90, then the 100 has gone beyond, but at least he hasn't gone that far beyond, whereas the 120 guy has clearly gone far beyond.
Just use shamanim. It's like a math lesson. Like, it sounds like isn't somebody an expert on the value of land?
Well, these three people are the dayanim who are supposed to assess the land, and the point is that they obviously don't know. But we all know how complicated it is to assess land. Mm-hmm. Sure, if you took two assessors, professional assessors on your house, you'd get two different opinions about what the value of it is worth.
You take the average.
Right. So, okay, that's the first opinion. That's the second opinion. Now, obviously, that one was a little easier to explain than the third one, which is a very strange opinion. Which, again, what did they do? They took the average, they took the amount between the differential between the top and the bottom, which was 40, and divided it by 3, and then added it to the lowest amount. So, how do we explain that one? Acherim umrim osim shuma b'nehenu mishalshim. Kasavre hayara tishim b'tilta v'tilta shavya. They held that that land was worth 93 1/3. Hai dekaamar esrim, katayt leisar v'tilta lachore. Right, the one who said 20, which is really 80, was 13 1/3 off, you know, under. V'hai dekaamar mane. Okay, well now where's he going to go with this one, right? If you want to say everyone was to'ed the same way, like the last case, the 100 guy was only to'ed by 7 2/3. So what's he going to say now? Right? Behind the camera mane, what? Did I say it wrong? Oh, 6 2/3, sorry. Behind the camera mane, katait leisar v'tilta lekame. He was also off 13 1/3 ahead, okay, which doesn't work out mathematically, so I'll explain right now. Ubedin hu delay matfe. The assumption is that they both were off by the same amount, and really he was going to say, okay, what would it be? 106 2/3. Okay, he was really going to say that. V'hai delo ka'amar, but the reason he didn't, here's an interesting one. Okay, if you think about the price right, it also fits in with the model. Savar mistai de kamatfina kulei hayachavre. I'm not going to veer so far off from what my friend said. In other words, he thought it was really worth 106 2/3, but he saw that the guy said 80, and he said, well, I can't veer so, and as, maybe I'm wrong, right? It started to make him question his assessment. So therefore, he really wanted to say that, but he went with a round number that was close, that was a little bit lower. Okay. So again, the Gemara is going to say, why are you assuming it's between number 1 and number 2? Why wouldn't you say that it's the same thing, but between number 2 and number 3? Adrabah, and obviously they're going to answer the same answer. Ha'ara me'avitzleis avitzolta shavya. Right? Maybe it's really 113 1/3. V'hai dekamar mane, katai tzleis avitzolta lachore. Right? The one who was mane was 13 1/3 under. V'hai dekamar shloshim, tai tzleis avitzolta lekamei. Okay? He was 13 1/3 off, you know, over. U'bedinu dekamar tfei, and really he was going to say more. But savar mistai dekamar tfina kulei ha'achaber. And I'm not going to veer so much from what my friend said. So why don't we say it like that? So again, the answer, nikot mea tre kame biadcha, dimitorat mea lo mafkele, right? Go with the lower people because they haven't yet veered from the 100. Okay, 1 second. Okay, so now, Amarav Huna, halacha ke'acherim. Interestingly, what do they say? The halacha is like acherim. Seems quite strange because of all the opinions, it seemed the least likely. Amar Rav Ashi, what's more interesting is what goes on right now. Tama d'acherim lo yad inan, hilchatav dinan kavatayu. I don't even understand their reason. How could we possibly paskin halacha like them? So the question is, why does Rav Ashi say, I don't even understand their reason, right? We kind of explained their reason. Now, one opinion is, well, the Gemara did ask a question on it, and even though they answered it, maybe still it was questioned, although that would be the same as the second one, but again, we're really only talking about that one. And it could be that he just thinks that it's more likely that the other one was the correct answer, right? In other words, it just seemed more logical to him to give a different answer. There's another source that seems to indicate the same thing about Rav Ashi. Tanu Dayane Gola, it's like the same thing but in a different version, the way it came down to us. There was a braita that says, Dayane Gola sim shuma benehen umishalshin. That the Dayane Gola, which generally is a reference to Shmuel and Karna, that they did, even though it says Tanu, it's a little bit weird because it sounds like it's a Makor Tana'i, right, because they were Emoraim, but it could be because they were the first Emoraim, so maybe they still have Braita going around about their opinions. Okay, you follow? It's the Braita. Braita is from the Tekufat HaTana'im, but Shmuel and Karna are from the first generation of Emoraim. So it's strange that they would appear in a Braita. Okay, so the Rashbam says that Dayanei Gola is Shmuel and Karna. Okay, so I'm raising a difficulty that it doesn't make so much sense they appear in a braita. But it could be, since they were the first, maybe they still, there were a few braita going about around then. So he says, like acherim, and then Amar Rav Huna, Hilchata Kedayanei Agola. In other words, he doesn't say the Hilchata does like acherim. He says it, well, since the Dayanei Agola did like the acherim, then we're going to paskin that way. And then Amar Rav Ashi, Tamad Dayanei Agola, Lo Yad Inan Hilchata Avdinan Kavatayu. And then Rav Ashi said, right, how could it possibly be? It doesn't make any sense. Okay? So interestingly, we're left with a psak, but yet it's questioned. If you look, by the way, I didn't look up lahalacha lemaaseh, but if you look on the page before on Kuf Zayin, where the opinions are brought and where it says nidom b'mane, okay, there's a little dalet there. That dalet always tells you go into the Amish Pot near mitzvah and go see where this is paskin, and it's always put by the one that the majority of the poskin paskin like. So it seems that we really, because Rav Ashi has the bottom line in the sugya. So we don't paskin like the acherim, and we paskin like the simple, average, or median, depending on how you explain it. Okay, new Mishnah. Ha'omer l'chavero, chatzi sadeh ani mocher l'cha. Mishamnim b'nehem v'notel chatzi sadeh. If you say to someone, I'm selling you half my field, so we do what's called mishamnim b'nehem. Okay, which we don't exactly understand what it means. The Rashbam says, we'll see in the Gemara. Okay, it's a bit of an unclear term. Either it comes from, the way that makes the most sense to me comes from Shuma. Okay, even though there's a nun in there, right? Mishamnim sounds like we fatten it up. Okay, so we'll see. Some interpret it that way. But Mishamnim, it sounds like we do a Shuma and we assess, you know, what's half the land. And we give him half the land. Okay, but it seems like we're going to see later that the Gemara is going to immediately say that the lokach gets the worst part. In other words, when he sells his land, and this is an interesting one, that even though we say, even if you say mocher ba'ayin yafa mocher, okay, they're going to say this a little bit contradicts, because the mocher generally, right, he's mocher ba'ayin yafa, so you would think that he's going to give you the better half if he's selling you. But according to this, no, he gives you the poor, right, the less good half. And then, how does that work with mocher ba'ayin yafa mocher? So mocher ba'ayin yafa mocher is a totally different situation. That's when he's selling you something in his field, and then the question is he's selling you, you know, is he giving you the path to get there? Is he, right? That's not when, and that's when he's selling you maybe everything, or he's selling you, you know, the whole boor, the whole land, and right, and then leaves his boor, or something like that. But it's not a case where he's selling you part of his property, and it's where he's splitting 50-50. Then he's going to keep the better part for himself, okay? And why? And why does he have rights to do this? Because the Yadol Al Yonah, what?
That's he has the chazaka.
Right, he has the chazaka, it's his land, and he can determine which part he wants to give to you. If you'd say, chetzia b'darom ani mocher lecha, I'm giving you the south part of the field, okay, the southern area of the field, which seems pretty clear that you're designating a particular part. So again, mishamnim b'nehem, v'notel chetzia b'darom. So what does this mean? The assumption is that you're giving him, you don't actually have to give him the part in the Darom. You could be Mishamnim and keep the part in the Darom. And then what do you have to do, basically? You have to at least give him the value of what the part in the Darom was worth. And if the part on the other side is worth less, then you have to compensate him financially. Okay, so just because you say Chetzia B'Darom, it only means that you're telling him, I'm giving you the value of the Chetzia B'Darom. It doesn't actually mean that you have to give him, again, the Yad Mocher Al Yonah, and he can give him whichever part of the land he wants. And just make sure that's the Mishamnim B'Nehem, make sure that he evaluates it properly and gives him what he's deserving of, you know, what he bought. Now we have a very strange, this is classic, v'hu mekabel alav, okay, who the who is not clear, right? Who's the subject? So you could say, until now we've been talking about the mocher, right? Ha'omer lechavero, okay? And the whole subject is him, and therefore hu mekabel alav means that the mocher takes upon himself mekom hagader charitz uben charitz. Bekamu charitz shisha tvachim uben charitz shlosha. Okay, this teaches us the ben charitz, right, the son of a charitz, and a charitz is like a little ditch, the son of a charitz is going to be smaller than the father, right? So it's a small ditch and a large ditch, okay? We're going to talk about this later in the Gemara, not today. But basically what the idea is, according to this explanation, it's the mocher, that if he sold him a field, he also has to give him, out of his own property, not the part that he sold him, a place to put the fence around the property to protect it from animals coming in, and a place for the charitzim that they need for the field. Okay, other people say, no, it's actually not the buyer, the seller, it's the buyer who has to use of his own property to put up the gadir. So there's a big debate about, you know, it's obviously the Mishnah is telling us something important as to who's responsible. Unfortunately, the Mishnah didn't say it in a clear enough manner, and there's two different interpretations that are actually opposite of each other. Who's actually responsible? We'll see more about this in the Gemara tomorrow. So the Gemara starts out here. Amar Rav Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Lokeach notel kachush shebo. He takes the lean part of the land, okay? Not the fat land, but the lean part of the land. Okay, and again, that's based on what we said before. Amar le Rabbi Chiya bar Abba le Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Chiya bar Abba says to Rabbi Yochanan, v'ha'ana mishamnim b'nehem t'nan. But didn't we say mishamnim b'nehem? Which seems to indicate that they get equal portions or something like that. So Rabbi Yochanan was obviously pretty upset with Rabbi Chiya, and he says to him, Ada achalta kafniyata bebavel targimna miseifa. While you were sitting eating dates in Bavel, okay, this is that clear Eretz Israeli, arrogant, you Bavlim, you know, while you were sitting eating your dates in Bavel, right? It's like living the good life. It's the classic, you know, you in Kutzlar. It's while you were living the classic, you know, enjoying life in Bavel, you missed it, but we explained it from the Seifa. Okay, dekatani seifa, chetzia b'darom, ani mochir lecha, mishamnim b'nehem v'notel chetzia b'darom. V'amai mishamnim b'nehem v'ha chetzia b'darom, amrlei. Ela l'dame, hachanami b'dame. In other words, you can't possibly explain the seifa, right? The seifa has a problem, because what does it say? If you give the chetzia b'darom, right, what do you say, mishamnim b'nehem, v'notel chetzia b'darom, right? And then the mochir can keep the part in the darom. V'amai mishamnina b'nehem, right? So then what does it mean, mishamnina b'nehem? V'ha chetzia b'darom, amalei. Didn't he say, right? If you evaluate, it means you evaluate and give him the chetzia b'darom. So ela l'dame, what does it mean there? It means that you have to compensate him. If you give him less important land or less good land for what he paid for, then or for them, what's half? Also, you said half. So therefore, what it means there is financially, you have to compensate him. In other words, you don't have to necessarily give him that land, but at least make sure that he's compensated for the fact that he didn't get that land that you said you would give him. Therefore, hachanami in the reisha, in the first case, chatzis sadeh min amocher lecha, mishamnim b'nehem, and otel chatzis sadeh, means that you can give him the less good land, but just make sure, mishamnim b'nehem, the way they explain it now, is that you financially compensate him for the fact that you're giving him less, you know, the land that's valued at less. So again, it could be you're giving him more kachush land, and that again, it's just like we talked about the brothers before. The one could have had, you know, the idid, and one could have had the beinonid, and the idid was smaller than the beinonid, right? So again, the kachush and the, you know, the weak land, the thin land, the lean land versus the fat land could also be the same thing. But in other words, the point is, make sure that whatever you give him is either valued at half or pay him back, compensate him financially for the fact that you're not giving him actually half. Okay, so this shows again that the mocher yadola el yona, he gets to decide what it is he wants to sell. But again, he has to do it fairly and at least make sure to compensate him financially for if he's not giving him exactly what he said. Okay, that's it for today.